the transcriber. My name is Eric Elliott, and I'm with the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. And this is an interview for the Women Veterans Historical Project at the university. And I'm here in Winston-Salem today talking with Mary Turner about her service as a nurse in the Army or in the Air Force during the early 1950s. And so, Ms. Turner, thank you for sitting down in your busy schedule today and sharing with us a little bit on record about your time in service. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your family background. You were telling me before we started that you were born in Williamstown, Pennsylvania, but then your family moved at an early age to New Jersey.
That's right. I was 5 years old.
What did your folks do for a living?
My daddy was a coal miner. Mm-hmm. My mother was a seamstress. And they worked real hard.
Coal mining, and I guess you were born right there in the middle of the Depression, were you not?
I was born up there in the coal mining town, and I went back to see it several years ago, and it was just rubble.
Yeah.
There's nothing up there now but just rubble.
So he left Williamstown to get another job? Is that what it amounted to?
Another job. He had to work his way down from the top of that mountain. I was told that years later, anyone that came here from a foreign country had to pay their way back, and so he worked his way down from the top of that mountain.
So he was a first-generation American?
He was, but my mother was born here,
right.
And she was born in Pittsburgh, but she went to Europe with her family and married my dad.
Oh, they met over there, okay.
And then came back over here.
Mm-hmm. Great. You have any brothers and sisters?
I have one sister that's 2 years older than I am. She still lives in my hometown.
Great. You grew up in Linden, New Jersey.
Linden, New Jersey.
Were you somebody who liked school growing up?
Oh, I loved school. I was very active in school.
What was your favorite subject?
German.
German?
Yes.
Sehr
gut. I took it for 3 years.
Können Sie eben noch Deutsch sprechen?
Ich spreche sehr gut.
Yeah.
No, ich spreche kein Deutsch. Ich bin ein Dummkopf. My favorite teacher was my German teacher.
That's good. It's something that the variety of language skills we don't have for our kids nowadays, unfortunately.
I study about 7 or 8 different ones, so languages.
Well, since your family had fresh ties to Europe, I mean, did y'all speak home country language at home?
Yes, I still do. My parents spoke Hungarian because they came from Austria-Hungary originally, and then they also spoke Slavish, but they used to speak Hungarian, so I wouldn't understand them. And then one day I went down to a neighbor, I said, teach me some Hungarian. She said, okay. She taught me a few words, and I went back upstairs, and I said to my mom, I know Hungarian. She said, what do you know? I said, manga malat, and she slapped me. I called her a pig.
Yeah, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing, isn't it?
Never forget that word, Hungarian.
We'll have to worry about the translation on that one later on. Sorry about this, transcriber. It's not a good way to start throwing so much foreign words at you. We'll try to keep it in English. You grew up, you were, I guess, just 10 or 11 when Pearl Harbor Day happened. Do you remember Pearl Harbor Day?
I remember that we had to turn our lights out. It was scary because they were afraid the bombs. See, I was right near New York City.
Right.
It's not far from there. And we had to turn our lights out because we were afraid that they would see the lights and bomb us. And it was scary. It was very scary. And I remember just sitting in a dark room because we had to have dark shades and all that all the time. Yeah, I remember it real well. A lot of my neighbors, their older sons, were in the military and several of them never came back. So I remember that part very well, yeah.
School, I imagine. Were y'all doing things at school in support of the war effort?
Well, back then all we did was pray a lot.
Yeah.
We didn't, I don't think we did a whole lot as far as parading or anything like that.
Did you go to a public school?
Public school, yes. It was a huge school. I had 264 in my high school graduating class. That's a big school for that year.
Mm-hmm. And North Carolina was slow. I guess at that time high schools were 12 years then. We were 11 years for a long time.
Yeah,
now.
We were 12 years.
Okay. How about back to the relatives back in Europe? Did you get any word back from there how things were?
Well, because back then you didn't have much communication. I mean, you didn't have telephones or anything like that.
So once you left.
That was pretty much it, you know. In fact, I just went back in March and visited relatives. I didn't even know if I'd see anybody. And then they came here to visit us in September. And in August, they left about a week before 9/11. That was pretty sad.
You you graduated in 48.
48.
When did you get the idea that you wanted to be a nurse?
Well, back then we didn't have much of a choice. Today women can do anything they want to. Back then we had a choice. It was either a teacher or a nurse. Well, I couldn't afford to pay my tuition to college because my family was very poor and we didn't have the money, so I decided I'd go into nursing. I only had to pay $90 tuition. And then I had to work all night, but then they paid for my food and my room and board and
you live right here in a wing
in
of the hospital.
Dormitory. Mm-hmm. We had a dormitory.
This was in Jersey City?
Jersey City. It was a huge hospital. I lived on the 13th floor. And so it was a huge dormitory. A lot of us lived there. We had to work at night and go to class all day and that kind of thing, even as student nurses.
I guess it was about the time that you graduated that President Truman made women a part of the military on a permanent basis.
So. Yeah, but see, I wasn't too involved. I didn't really know what was going on because we were so busy working. All we know is, you know, there was a war going on, but that's about it.
Right,
the Korean War.
You would have been, I guess, on the board of nurses' school, June of 50 when the war broke out.
Mm-hmm.
Did they come to you all as nurses and say, we need nurses? How did you get interested in the military service?
Because after I left nurses training, I was trying to work to make some money so I could go to college because I wanted to complete a college degree. And I couldn't do very well, and so I went to a college in Illinois, and all I had enough money for was 1 year. And at the end of the year, I was just absolutely broke. My family had no money, and so I said, well, what am I going to do? I can't pay for my college education. They said, why don't you join the Air Force? I said, the what? They said, the Air Force, they need nurses for the military, just, you know, for the war. I said, okay, how do I do that? They said, go down in your dormitory. There's a recruiter down there.
So it was a suggestion of the folks at your school who said that you're stuck for money.
Exactly.
Go, sir. And the only one they mentioned was the Air Force?
Well, the recruiter was in our dormitory, in our basement, in my college dormitory. So I went down there, and I said to the guy, someone told me to come down here and sign up for the Air Force. He said, what are your qualifications? I said, well, I'm a student here. He says, well, anything else? I said, well, I'm a registered nurse. He said, oh, that makes you an automatic officer. I said, oh, an officer? What is that? Because I was pretty ignorant when it came to military. Because,
right.
You know, I mean,
You didn't have any immediate family experience with the
service. No, my dad was, you know, he was old and older. And he was in World War I, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And I had lots of cousins that were in World War II. But as far as the Korean War, I didn't know, you know, I didn't know too many. But he was in the, you know, in the army when he was in Europe during World War I.
So he would have been in the Austro-Hungarian army.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
When this was at Wheaton College. I don't think we have
Wheaton
that on
College
Wheaton
in
College in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
That's in where is it? Wheaton, Illinois, isn't it?
Wheaton, Illinois. It's near Chicago.
Okay.
I used to work in the hospital in Chicago at night so I could pay for my education. I mean, that's what I had to do. I had to work all night and go to class in the daytime. But I worked in it was a nice hospital. I was an assistant night supervisor, so it was pretty nice.
So you were there for a year, which means 51, you graduated from nursing school.
And then I worked at the hospital there in a TB hospital. See, back then TB was very prevalent, so I worked in a TB hospital. And back then, though, you couldn't get too close to your patients because it was a very contagious disease. But those guys would hug a little old lady and say, "That's your hug."
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was very sad. I mean, TB and all sorts of chest problems. That's where I worked for a year.
TB hospitals and polio, I guess, the two.
Yeah, polio was very. We had a lot of polio too.
But you were working at the TB hospital, and then it was about summertime. 52 that you
yeah,
decided to
then I went, yeah, I did. And I went to, you know, I went to college in 50, I was graduating in September 51, then I went to college in 52. And then I only went that year, and then I joined the Air Force. So it was the summer of 52.
Okay. You have a quote in one of these places about how your mom was spotted when you told her that you were going to go into service.
Oh, yeah. Like, we didn't have telephones back then, so I just wrote her a letter, and I said, "Dear Mom, I'm going into the Air. I just signed up for the Air Force. And so she wrote me back and she said, oh my goodness, just don't tell anybody you're my daughter, because back then women didn't go into the Army or the Air Force.
I know in World War II there was a problem about the reputation of women, because there were a lot of vicious rumors that were spread. Still a problem?
Well, I guess it was for the older folks, but I was a good girl. I mean, I really was.
But I mean, you didn't face that kind of insult personally?
No, not really. I was friends with a girl that was kind of, you know, but I didn't. I was a good girl.
Right.
I'm serious.
What about your dad?
Well, he didn't care. My dad was sick all the time anyway. He was very sick. He had coal miner's asthma, and so he was very, very sick.
You were, summer of 52, you went down to Qatar Air Force Base in Montgomery.
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's where you went
for
basic. I've talked to different nurses at different stages, and for sometimes nurses, they have basically 2 weeks, and it's just a protocol training and nothing else. Others have basic. Was yours very short?
It was very basic. They were just teaching us the rules and regulations of
your
Air
superiors.
Force. Yeah, right. How to respect your superiors, how to salute, not to hold hands when you're walking with your boyfriend or any of that stuff when you're in uniform.
No fraternization. It was
very, very basic. It wasn't anything hard. We did fly in an airplane just to let us know what an airplane was like, and that was fun.
When you joined up with this recruiter, did they ask if you wanted to go overseas? Did they give you some choice of the kind of duty you'd have, or?
No, they just told us we have to go to basic training, and then they would send us where we had to go.
And this was this for a 2-year tour of duty?
Yeah, that's what you signed up for, is 2 years, uh-huh.
At that time, how old did you have to be? I guess you were already 21, so you didn't worry about your parents' signature.
Yeah,
so 21, I guess, was parents' signature cut off
there. Yeah.
And at the time you joined, you didn't have a steady boyfriend you were leaving behind or anything like that?
I had one in Philadelphia, I told you that.
Oh, okay.
He wanted me to marry him, and I told him I wasn't ready to get married yet. I wasn't. I was ready to see. I wanted to see the world. I mean, you know.
Getting money for school, what was it, I guess the GI Bill, what was that going to do for you? Were you going to get basically a year of college paid for each year that you served? Is that what it worked out, or how was...
To be honest with you, they were going to give me that money to go to college, but I did not use it, because by the time I went back to UNCG, it had expired.
So you had a certain number of years you had to follow up with?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I had to pay my own way through UNCG. But it was worth it. I've enjoyed every bit of it.
You were a short stay at Qatar, and then you went to Mitchell Air Force Base. Was that in upstate New York?
Or? Long Island.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
It's closed now. It's no longer
an
Air Force Base.
That was simply a stop along the way, or what were you doing up there?
I was doing regular nursing up there.
How long were you there?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. I got married. I came up in May. Probably about maybe 8 months at the most. And then I signed up for the Far East, because my boyfriend was going to the Far East.
So you had to be a volunteer, in a sense, to go overseas, if that's
Well, at one point you did. I mean, sometimes they needed somebody, they just take them and ship them over there, but for me it was, I'm sent to Mitchell.
I know during, when they first started out, the women were very circumscribed in that they could not go to overseas duty except for Army nurses and a few WACs or two, and then they sort of more relaxed those rules. But I just said, when you were in,
at the time you were in,
it was a volunteer call.
Yeah, they said, I volunteered to go to the Far East because my boyfriend was going.
Your understanding is that you would have been working in a clinic environment in Korea, or would have been a MASH unit, or what kind of work?
It would have been anything they wanted, yes. And the guy that was in charge of that told me to volunteer. He was the head of the, Far East Air Force. And he said, go ahead and volunteer and we'll make sure that you're with him, that kind of thing.
So you all were, boyfriend, future husband at the time.
He already had orders to go.
He didn't have a choice in the matter.
Mm-mm.
You requested to be near him.
Yes.
So that you could do that.
But then he came home and we got married so that we can, because as a husband and wife, you could be sit together. But when your boyfriend and girlfriend know.
That's a change in and of itself in the first 10 years because they were usually, at the beginning, were frowning very much on getting married.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Asked to leave. But at the time you were in, I guess the big break point was pregnancy. As long as you weren't pregnant, you could be in.
Well, yeah, you could get married, but if once you had a baby, you were out.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't have any children. I stayed in my whole time. And when we got out, I didn't have any children. I adopted a baby 5 years later, and I had to get out of the reserves because you couldn't even be in the reserves if you had a child.
Because that you wouldn't have been able to be called up at will.
No, but look at it the way it is today. I mean, you can be a single mom and be in the military.
That's right. Go to Gulf War and have your kids in daycare for an unlimited amount of time. It's so strange. James, your boyfriend. Was he assigned to Korea, or was he going to be in Japan?
He was heading on to the Far East, but when they get you to the Far East, like Tokyo, then they send you where you have to go.
Okay, so all he knew was his next stop was Tokyo, and at their
they would send him. But he got to California, and they said, no, I'm sorry, sir, but you're not going to the Far East, you're going to Hawaii. And he had already bought all these heavy winter uniforms and everything, so he said, oh. And see, my order said, go to the Far East, so I was headed for the Far East.
You were in New York just before heading over there, right during election season.
Yeah.
52, where I'm sure Korea was an issue and how to, because Truman and the situation with MacArthur, I guess, had taken place by then. Were you very, most young people in their early 20s are not terribly politically and not terribly worldly informed. Were you in that category?
No, I was just, I just wanted to serve. I just wanted to be a nurse and just help the wounded. That's about all I could think of. So I was like, I'd go around to the different wards and see these guys. And, you know, it's kind of sad when you look at guys without arms or legs or something.
In Long Island, was that the kind of ward you were on? Was it all sorts of...
I had all kinds of people. At Mitchell, I had all kinds of people.
You worked the same shift 5 days a week, you rotate, what was your work schedule?
We rotated, we worked days, nights, whatever, just rotated.
5 day work week or 7 days on, 2 days off, whatever it would be?
Well, I don't even remember having any time off, to be honest with you.
Okay.
It was just a full-time job. Yeah.
You stayed on the at the base of the hospital, I guess,
sure did.
Did you have any free time to explore New York and that area?
Well, since I was from New Jersey, I was familiar with New York.
Go home, I guess.
I did once in a while. I didn't go very much because I was working so much, but I did. It took me so long to get home that I didn't do it very much. There's a lot of traffic, and I don't know how many hours it took me to get across the bridge.
It took me an hour to drive 10 miles when I lived in Philadelphia, and I can go to, you know, Kerrsville and back three times in that time.
It took me 2.5 hours to get home from Greensboro one day.
Oh, yeah. Well, Greensboro is not a good thing without the construction anymore. You got married in
May 2nd,
back in Linden?
Yeah, well, actually, Mitchell Air Force Base.
Okay.
That's another story. I was marrying somebody that wasn't my church, so they wouldn't marry in my church, so I had to marry at the Air Force Chapel.
So you had some of your service buddies who were there?
Oh, yeah.
Dressed in uniform for the ceremony?
Well, somewhere. It was a very small wedding. We were going to get married on May the 1st, but my husband couldn't get back from Hawaii in time, so we had to cancel our wedding to May 2nd. So most of the people showed up on May 1st, but we didn't. So we came in on the 2nd. So we had a very small turnout for our wedding.
Yeah.
But it was nice. It was just a small wedding.
Yeah. He left, and then you went to, where were you? I guess this was on the way out to California. Were you at Stoneman, or where did you stop on the way out to Tokyo?
I stayed in Hickam, Air Force Base, yeah.
At Hickam, but you were saying that somebody
in California
told you about the...
I had to stay in California for 2 weeks until my orders came through to where I was going, you know. And then I had to stay there to, you know, get all my paperwork filled out and everything. So it was like a 2 week stay in California. And I had my classmate from Wheaton College was living in California. So she came up, picked me up, and I stayed with her for 2 weeks. And then I finally was able to fly to Hawaii.
And that's the point where they told you
I couldn't fly.
Their paperwork wasn't worked work out to go together and...
Because they said that I should have had letters changed in Washington. And in Washington, they told me I should have had my orders changed. I will have my orders changed in California, but that didn't work.
Did you go directly then to Tokyo after?
I went to Hawaii.
Went to Hawaii?
I had this terrible earache. They wouldn't let me fly because back then, if you had ear problems, you couldn't fly. So the doctor said, she can't fly, she has an ear problem. So I stayed in Hawaii for about a week for a honeymoon, and it was wonderful. And then I had to get on the plane and go to Tokyo.
And how long were you in Tokyo?
Probably about 4 months, 4 or 5 months. It wasn't that long.
Working at the hospital?
It was a clinic. It was in the heart of Tokyo. It was the clinic. So we saw mostly day patients. I mean, people that just came in for certain things.
What was it like being in
Tokyo?
Another country?
To be honest with you, Japan was a little bit different than it is today. You could walk along the streets and be perfectly safe. I had friends that were missionaries there, and I would walk down the street far, far away to go visit them. And that was a real experience, walking through Tokyo when they had all these honey bucket men out there pushing those honey buckets. You know what they are. Okay. But nobody bothered anybody. I mean, I went to the Royal Hawaiian. No, that's not the Royal. What's the name of that? There's a Tokyo hotel there. It was just a little old hotel, and I remember going in there, and they've just recently remodeled it, and it's just another world. I mean, back then, it was just a small little town.
Well, was there still evidence of destruction from the war? Was it being built up pretty good?
No, there was still lots of destruction. You can see buildings that were down and stuff like that.
Did they give you any cautions about how to interact with the... Love the population.
The people were so nice. In fact, I wanted to learn Japanese because, you know, I mean, if you're living in Japan, you want to learn their language. But anyway, I didn't know. I wanted to learn Japanese just like I did the Hungarian. I wanted to learn Japanese. And so I said to this janitor, he came in there and I said, how about teaching me some Japanese? And so he started telling me stuff. Then he taught me to say, Watashi wa anata wo shitemasu. And I thought, okay, I'll say it. So I kept saying it. Finally went up to somebody and I said, I learned some Japanese. They said, what did you learn? I said, well, so he said, thank you, I love you too. So I learned some good stuff.
He was telling you the lies to make a quick friend in Japan.
But they were very, very nice people. They were nice to us when we were there. I don't remember any, I even went to visit a family and I don't think anybody ever had any real hard feelings against us as far as, you know, the World War II bombing and all that stuff.
I assume everywhere you went over there you had to be in uniform.
Yes, I wore my uniform all the time, and that was good.
Stateside, that probably wasn't the case, was it?
No, we didn't have to wear uniforms all the time. If we had to go to a formal something, we had to wear uniforms, but as far as going to the store shopping, no.
Probably to this day, there's still certain more restrictions about you need to wear a uniform.
I don't think it's that way today. I think
maybe with terrorism, maybe they want you to blend in.
Probably safer if you didn't wear a uniform.
It's true.
This whole situation is totally, it's just getting to me.
And
I told you about walking around the streets and handing them, getting that book handed to me. The truth about Afghanistan.
Yeah. 4 months there, at which point you thought you might at any time be sent on over to Korea. Where was James at that time? Did he stay in?
He was in Hawaii. He was stationed there. He was a clinic in Hawaii. We didn't communicate much because back then we didn't have telephones and we'd send letters to each other and that's about it.
Right.
So you didn't call people on the phone like you do today. You didn't have your little cell phones.
If you weren't strong from the beginning, that's a pretty strong tension to put in right from the beginning.
Yeah, but we did all right. We did okay. We'd write love letters to each other and we met a lot.
Good.
I've been married almost, 48 years?
You were putting on the long-term plan anyway.
We got married for better or worse, and sometimes it's not so good, we still stay married. I'm kidding.
When 4 months in Tokyo, and I guess you found out you were not going to... Did the armistice come first? Because it's pretty...
The war ended while I was in Tokyo, but my husband was in Hawaii, and he had friends that were, you know, all over the place, and there was a nurse that was leaving. There were only two nurses in the clinic where my husband was. And the one nurse was getting out of the military and she was going home. And so there was a vacancy there. And so he talked to a general who happened to come for lunch one day. And he was telling him, you know, that I was in Tokyo and that he would love to have me come back and that the nurse was leaving and all that. So he talked to the people where I was on temporary assignment in Tokyo because they were waiting for me to be shipped over the opening. And when they got the word, they said, oh, she's leaving, so we'll let her go back there. So that's how I managed to get back. I was just lucky. And the guy that I talked to when I got to Tokyo was really nice. He said, well, look, if we send you right straight to Korea, you're going to be stuck there forever. But we'll put you on temporary duty here in Tokyo so that when there's an opening, we can send you some, you know, to back home, back to Hawaii.
Did either of you think about making the service a career?
Not really. My husband wanted to go into private practice, so he just got on there and I worked for him.
Was he drafted to go into the service? Did he join voluntarily?
He volunteered.
Was it in part to help pay for his service?
No, I think what they do is lots of times when you're in the medical profession, you are asked to go and sign up for a couple of years. I think that was his obligation, not mine, but his.
Right.
So I think he really, you know, did it for the government. But I don't even know if he got paid for it. He's still in the reserves. And he's been to several places, like he'll serve in the Navy or something like that. Because he works now for the Public Health Service, and he'll go, like he stayed with my son, when my son was in the Navy, he went up there and took care of patients up there. And he didn't even get paid for that, he just volunteered to go.
Right.
And he's still, as far as I know, still in the reserves.
You came back to Hawaii, and then shortly thereafter, you all were discharged.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you come back to? Back to New Jersey? Where to?
We came to Greensboro, North Carolina.
And so far I have no clue why that would be.
My husband's from Rocky Mount, North Carolina.
Okay.
He's a Southern boy, and he married a Yankee. But he was from Rocky Mount, North Carolina. And when we were trying to decide where we were going to live in North Carolina, he said, well, I don't want to go back to Rocky Mount. And he said, I don't think I want to go to the mountains. Why don't we just go somewhere right in the middle of the state? And so he pointed to the map and came up with Greensboro. And somehow, somebody got word that we wanted to go to Greensboro and asked him to come and be in practice with him. This man's been gone for a long, long time, but he's had my husband come in practice with him. And then when we were there for a while, somebody from Kernersville, Paul, came over to visit us, and he said, we need you in Kernersville. So we went to Kernersville and opened our own practice. And we were in Kernersville for a long time, and then my husband went back in the military. Oh, he forgot that. Yeah, he went back into the military, but he went to the Public Health Service and we were stationed on Long Island in New York.
When did he go back into the service?
It was about 5 years after we were in private practice. Yeah.
So you're talking about late 50s?
Probably, yeah. 50, so we had the baby. It was probably 59.
And how long was he in at that
time? Just 2 years. And then we got out and he came back to Greensboro. And he's been practicing there ever since, until what, maybe 4 years ago when he retired.
Okay. And I think I caught when somewhere that you, were you working in his office for a while?
I worked for him a lot, yes. I didn't get paid though.
Were you in the office or you?
I was everything. I was the only person in his office for a long time until he finally got rid of me and hired somebody.
So when you say we opened the office, you mean we opened it because
yes,
you were in the office?
Yes, I was there with him. Yes, we both worked together. And then he hired a girl to come in. And then when we had adopted our child, I still kept working. But then when I had a baby, then I finally dropped out.
And you were telling me that was about 5 years after.
After
you,
5 years, 5 years, 5 years. So we had three children.
And you were telling me that you got the one son that was in this. When was he in service from when to when?
Oh, gosh. Okay. When he got out of high school, he went to college, like one of the colleges for about a year. And then he joined the Navy for about 8 years. So he's been out for several years now.
Is that a decision y'all approved of with him?
Oh, yes.
Given your own background in the service?
He was looking forward to going in, and he liked it. He was stationed in Italy, in Sicily. And I went to visit him while he was there. It was wonderful. He really liked it. And he was in the Middle East War. I mean, he was actually on a ship. He was actually on a ship over there.
Your husband's been in the reserves. And how active have you been with veterans groups?
I have just recently joined the
The men, the women?
No, it's the
VFW,
American Legion. I just recently joined the American Legion, and I don't know how come I got into it.
Were you asked to join, or did you just...
I think this guy that comes to the Y a lot, he's very active in it, and he said for me to join it, so I decided I would.
Well, that's a very enlightened attitude, because I've talked to a number of women who never have been asked, even though people know they were in service.
I went to the Kernsville thing when they had the memorial thing, and there were a lot of veterans there, and I was the only female.
When did you start doing the writing?
When I took a bunch of friends to New York on a tour. They wanted me to go with them just to see a play. But the reason they wanted me to go with them was so I could give them a tour of New York, because I'm very familiar with New York, since I've lived there 3 times. And they enjoyed it so much. When I came back, I wrote about the trip and about how much fun we had and everything. So that's when the editor gave me my own column.
This was in the local paper?
Uh-huh, the Kernsville News, and it's called Yoda and Me.
Now, where did you get that name?
Yoda was my dog, and I used to write about her all the time.
This was the name of your dog before the movie Star Wars, or after?
To be honest with you, it must have been before, because she's been gone for years. And I remember writing about her all the time, because I would always say something about Yoda did this, and Yoda and I did this, and we'd take a lot of walks, and I'd write letters to the editor all the time. I was always writing anyway, and I'd always mention Yoda. And so when they got that article, he put down there Yoda and Me, and I've been doing that ever since.
If you look back at your life, and when you were in service, you were not a terribly interested public person, because you were young, you had your own private world to take care of and your family, and yet now it's pretty clear that you're writing on things as a community voice. When did that ratchet up for you? The length of stay in the area? Or?
No, I've always been interested in journalism. I took a journalism class a long time ago, and I've always been interested in it. And I used to write letters to the editor all the time, and I've got copies of things that I wrote that I can't even believe I wrote them.
Was that what your major was at UNCG?
No, my major at UNCG was political science, and then my master's was in public administration. But I started out as a PE major, because I wanted to complete the PE that I started at Wheaton. But my husband said, honey, there's no demand for old PE teachers. So I dropped it, took political science.
And have you used that particular drumming, the political science and the public administration? Has that helped you?
Well, I do write a lot of articles about what's going on in the world.
I mean, it seems to me that has to factor. I was trying to figure out where, because from just being a reporting of fun things, you seem to take it more of a serious tack. And
I do.
I would imagine that your military service flavors that experience
exactly.
as well. And the fact that you've had you're a spouse of the military, a parent of the military, and a military person yourself.
I hadn't thought about that, but you're right.
So you've got three different perspectives on this process.
And my loyalty is to this country, and I think being in the military has helped me to be an American, 100% American.
You know, the service has, in my lifetime, when I was young, there was Vietnam that I didn't know much about,
and then
we had the volunteer, well, we had registered for the draft, and then we had an all-volunteer service. For people who are not military, what do you think is the biggest misconception about military?
About the military? I think if you haven't been over there and saw what these guys go through, you don't appreciate it. I don't think you can even visualize what people go through. I mean, when I came back on that plane with all those guys, I couldn't believe that those kids went through so much. And they were kids to me. And today, we don't even think about it. I mean, just recently, there were so many, like 4 guys killed just recently. And it was an accident. It wasn't, you know, something that they were shot or anything like that. But
friendly fire.
Friendly fire. And there's too much of that going on. When I think about these guys giving their lives for our country, they don't have to do that, but most of these guys volunteer to do it. And I just feel like we need to encourage them, we need to do something to help them, just be there for them.
It was encouraging, if there was anything encouraging, I thought, after 9/11, it was that for a few precious weeks, people really looked out for each other and were trying to be overly encouraging to each other, because it was very easy to get depressed, I think, about the situation. But I've noticed it's ratcheted back since then. And I don't know what, is Do you think our country is more patriotic now than it was when you were in service?
No, I think we are so diverse now that we're no longer a United States of America. I think we're getting so diverse. If you look in Greensboro, they're having pickets. The Muslims are over there protesting against the Jews. The Jews are on one side of the street, the Muslims are on the other. And back when I was a kid, I went to school with all kinds of people. I mean, I went to school with Italians, Germans during the war, Germans, Italians. We were friends. We were Americans. We didn't say, I'm German. We were just proud to be an American.
We've become too hyphenated, maybe.
Yes, I think that's the biggest problem.
We've got to subdivide ourselves so much.
That's the problem. We used to be the United States of America, but now I think everyone wants to be this kind of an American. That when I was a kid, we grew up with everybody. I lived in a black neighborhood. We were friends. A big black football player hugged me in the middle of the street one night when I went to visit New Jersey 25 years later, and he still recognized me. I mean, we grew up together. We were Americans, even though they were Italian, German, you name it, Polish. We were still American. And we didn't call ourselves Polish-American. We didn't call ourselves Slovak-American or German-American. We were American. And most of those guys that lived in my neighborhood were from, their parents were from different countries, but they joined the military. They were in the Marines, and some of them lost their lives. I had four cousins that died, four brothers, two of them were killed. And, you know, the rest, all four of them served in different, you know, branches, but two of them were killed.
Like you're saying, we make our identity more by, not by what we have in common, but what's our distinctiveness.
Yeah.
It's like watching cable TV with 300 channels. Every group has a channel.
Yeah, if
a young woman came to you today and said, Ms. Turner, I'm thinking about joining the service and I don't know what to do, what would you tell her?
I'd say to join. I see a lot of kids. Since I work in the school system as a substitute teacher, I get to see all kinds of kids. I know kids that are in the ROTC, and there's one that's a real good friend of mine, and she's always, you know, hey, Miss, hey, Lieutenant. She calls me Lieutenant. But she's 100% military-minded, and she's going to make a career when she gets out of high school. But then I see other people who really don't seem to be qualified, but they're in the ROTC, and I think, I don't understand how these kids can be in the military. Because when I was in the military, I couldn't even hold my husband's hand in the uniform. But now these kids are out in the courtyard in uniform, hugging and kissing and everything else, and I'm thinking, hey, I'll walk up to them and I'll say, look, don't do that in uniform. That's not professional. So I'm really a mean person. I call myself Lieutenant Turner in class sometime, and they know I mean it when I say Lieutenant Turner.
But there's so many people, I think, that have, when they talk to me about their own experience, they really value the self-discipline that they got and they would not have gotten anyplace else. And maybe that's what some folks need.
Well, see, I'm one of these who thinks we need to wear uniforms in school. We need to have every kid sign up for at least a year of military duty and teach them the basics of respecting authority and to mind the rules and whatever, because today the kids don't have that. They don't have the rules. I mean, we had to adhere to principles. We couldn't even smoke. I mean, I never smoked, but you couldn't even smoke in certain areas. You couldn't hold hands when you were in uniform, and you certainly wouldn't be kissing your husband if you were wearing a uniform out there, you know. So, I mean, we had a lot of respect for being patriotic and wearing our uniform and showing some discipline.
We haven't heard their name, but my guess is that among the bomber pilots in Afghanistan, there's probably one or two women.
Yeah.
And nowadays, women can do more things in the service, a lot more than they could when you were in. Do you think it's a good thing, and do you think there should be any limits on women's role in the military?
The only problem I have is that we're always discriminating against something. If we tell women they can't serve in the military if they have three babies and they're not married, that's discrimination. I think it's wrong. I think we should say, if you have a baby, you stay home and look after that baby that your husband fight. I don't think we should have single women with babies, single mothers in the military. They need to be with their kids and not overseas fighting. I mean, that's the way I feel about it.
So that would be your distinction?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Which isn't that much of an extension from when you were there. It's just a practical reality that certain things have to be taken care of.
I felt badly that they took me out of the reserves because I adopted a child, but I could, you know, now I can understand it, but I still could have been in the reserves. It would have been no problem, you know. But if I had to be called to active duty, then I could have said no. You know?
I didn't get the sense, and we're touring your thing. Did you ever have any experience in your service time that got you afraid? You sound like you're pretty open to new experiences kind of person.
I have never been afraid. I have always had a lot of faith in God. believe me. And I just know that God's going to look after me. I got lost in Winston the other day, and I went through one of the worst neighbors in Winston. And I was my tank was on empty, and it was 10 o'clock at night, and I thought, oh boy, every time I turned, I was on a dead-end street, and I thought, how am I ever going to get out of this place? I'm going to be on empty, and somebody's going to kill me out here. And I just looked up, and I said, Lord, please help me out of here. I am lost. And I turned one block, and I was out of there.
Sometimes you just have to ask. That's
see?
Good.
Yeah. That's the way it is. God looks after old stupid people, and I'm both.
That's good. Well, it's been about the time that I said it was going to take,
yeah.
And I appreciate you sitting down with us. It's a quick overview, but you've hit, without knowing it, a lot of the kinds of questions that we try to ask everybody. And is there anything about your service time or about what your experience has meant to you that I haven't asked you about that you'd like to share?
No, I'm just thankful that I had the opportunity to serve my country and to do something good. I mean, back when I was growing up, women didn't do a lot of stuff like that, and I think that helped me to be more active in all sorts of things. I've traveled all over the world by myself. I've been to Afghanistan, I picked up that book. I've been to every place in Russia, Uzbekistan, which people never even heard of until just recently. Been to the Great Wall of China, just Antarctica, just all. But I'm not afraid because I know that, you know, I mean, I've been through so much that it doesn't scare me. I mean, I've flown on every kind of an airplane there is in the military. We flew bombers, we flew Boxcars, we flew anything. So I just don't have any fear.
Makes the world a more fun place when you feel that way.
Yeah, and in dealing with kids in school, it's... I mean, you have to be strong. You can't, you know, be afraid of the kids. I mean, they're mean. Some of them, I have some horror stories about kids in school, but that's a different subject. But being in the military makes me tougher, and I don't put up with stuff. I mean, I don't put up with misbehavior in class, and I make sure they understand why. And if they get smart, I look and say, "You're talking to Lieutenant Turner," and they go, "What do you mean?" And then somebody could say, "She was in the airport, she better watch it." You know, so I mean, there's a little, some of the kids have respect and some don't even know what you're talking about. But the ones that know, they'll say, "You better watch it, she's been in the Air Force," or something like that. But it's fun.
Well, on behalf of the school, and after all of our many fits and starts to try to get through this, I really appreciate you sitting down and doing this evening. And Transcriber, wherever you are, we'll try to get you through the Hungarian and German as best as possible.
And the Japanese.
Yes, konnichiwa. Bye.